Box Office Battle. I'm Biggs.
And I'm Brandon.
So Carl just no-showed all of a sudden, so we're going to just riff it. We're going to be talking about some movies that have been around for a little bit. We're going to give some predictions on Kong versus Godzilla. Is that what they're calling it?
Godzilla versus Kong.
Oh, Godzilla versus
Godzilla
Kong.
Gets top billing.
I will say nowadays he should.
You know, and he's, I mean, this is what, the third movie in this new reboot?
Okay, there was Godzilla.
That's a Bryan Cranston one.
Mm-hmm. Well, he dies in the first like, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was the one where he fights Mothra, right?
And Ghidorah.
Yeah. And then
he teams up with Mothra and fights Ghidorah, I think.
Okay. Are we missing one in between?
I get these kind of confused with the other kaiju movie, Pacific Rim, both of those.
Because
they're
that.
Kind of a lot of the same style.
Yeah. Just with mechanical robot suits.
Yeah. And more nondescript kaiju.
Right. I feel like there's been three of them. Am I missing something here?
I don't.
Because wasn't it kind of like the third one was a bit of a battle royale and had like a whole bunch of them?
See, I thought that's what the last Godzilla was, because I just watched that not too long.
And then I think the only King Kong movie, unless I'm mistaken, that they've done on this reboot is Kong Skull Island, right?
Right.
Which is great. I saw that in the theater. That was such a fun watch. It was just everything that I wanted from a King Kong movie. And honestly, I was going in, I think I had MoviePass, and I was just like not expecting much from it. And I had such a good time. It was just so much more fun than I thought they would do. Because King Kong movies are, it's usually the same story over and over again, you know? They get kind of hung up on that kind of stuff. But are you still looking this up?
Yeah. It's...
All right. What'd you find?
So there are four movies in the new Godzilla MonsterVerse. There's Godzilla, which came out in 2014, Kong Skull Island in 2017, Godzilla King of the Monsters, which was 2019, and then coming out as we're recording is Godzilla versus Kong.
Okay, so there was just two Godzilla movies before this.
Right.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I'm looking forward to watching this either way. I know it's going to hit HBO Max. It'll maybe have hit by the time we
It's hit this. As we're recording.
Oh, has it? Okay.
Yeah.
So people already know the results, but who do you think's going to win out of this matchup?
You know, I think Godzilla is the number one champ, and it's going to take a lot for Kong to take him down. I mean, radioactive dinosaur monster versus big monkey.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Kong. That's I just think Americans are steadfast for Kong in general. I don't think they're going to let Godzilla pull this out. But you know, it'll be a thing where, like, they both win in the end.
Or they do something shitty like team up.
Yeah, but they'll do something where you can, like, call a winner, but then, like, they'll both be winners ultimately.
Martha!
Yeah.
Both their parents are named Martha.
So they both ate somebody named Martha at a certain point. It was like the best snack they ever had. That would be a great one. Well, talking about monsters, I watched My Octopus Teacher on Disney Plus a little while ago, which is up for Best Documentary. Holy fuck, dude. I watched that 3 weeks ago, and every now and again, I think about it, and I start to get teary-eyed. It, like, legitimately affected me. It's about this diver who is from South Africa, and he did all these documentaries, and his house was so close to the shore that when they had a storm, it would blow open their door, and their whole floor would fill with seawater. And so he like went back to his old place to kind of relax and like try and get his energy back up, because he just felt like he didn't want to make movies right then. And he started diving, and then he found this octopus while he was diving, and he was wanting to see it more. And so he got the idea, what if I go and visit it every day? And so he started bringing his camera with him. I think he brought his camera with him that time, but he just would do a dive every single day. And the dude like holds his breath for like a couple minutes at a time. Pretty impressive. So he starts tracking this octopus, is just kind of watching him and watching him. And then at a certain point, it starts to like not seem to be afraid of him. And he's just seeing all this fantastic stuff with the octopus. And then at one point, he goes to kind of reach out for it. And then it just like scrambles away. And then he's just mad at himself because he just totally violated the trust with this octopus. And so he's starts to like try and figure out where it could have gone. So he literally like figures out how far it could have gone, like the terrain. He starts like mapping the whole terrain of the floor, trying to find it. And after a couple of weeks, he finally finds it again. And it starts to like hang out with him more and more. And then eventually it like reaches out and like touches his hand. And he just like has this great moment with it. And so he goes down the next day to try and find it again. And it gets attacked by these sharks that are there. And he has this thing where like he doesn't want to interfere with anything that's going on. But they fucking trap it in its den. And they take one of its tentacles. And then it just looks like it's fucking dying for a while after that. But eventually it recovers. It like grows back the tentacle. And it's like kind of the stubby, shorter one. Okay, this is when it starts to get sad, dude. So finally one day, it like literally goes into his arms. And basically just like hugs him. And is like hanging out with him and stuff. And so he spends all this time with the octopus. And then he comes down to see it again the next day. And there's another octopus there. Starts to get really sad because you realize so octopuses, this type that it is, only lives for a year, and in the towards the end of their life they mate and then they die very quickly after mating. So he knows it's not going to be around for much longer. Eventually it gives birth to like all these, the sac or whatever, with all the octopus coming out, and he just sort of sees it and it's just like this crazy color and can't do anything, and all the things are like knocking it around and stuff. And then finally a shark takes it out. But it's just like so goddamn sad at the end, dude, because like you can't watch this and not get attached to the octopus. Like it really is amazing. I've never seen a documentary that was able to really like capture emotion like this. And of course they juxtapose it with like his relationship with his son a little bit, but like it's definitely centered on this octopus, which I appreciated. This came out towards the beginning of the shutdown last year, and it just like had this moment where a lot of people were going to see it. I guess people remembered it enough to put it up for an Academy Award, so that's pretty awesome. And it's, I think, on two streaming services too. It's like Disney Plus and maybe Netflix. Highly recommend.
I haven't watched a lot of movies outside of this podcast, so I think the last one I remember watching was Coming to America.
Yeah. I watched that as well. Like literally the week that we dropped the episodes with Harlem Nights, I watched that movie, which that was not an accident that came up then. I'd been thinking about it for a while, but I was definitely timing it out intentionally. So what'd you think about it?
You know, I went along for the ride. I didn't have any expectations going into it. I knew it wasn't going to be as good as the original, but I wanted to give it a fair shot to go into it. And I was pretty entertained by it. Like, it hit all the beats I wanted it to. Like, it actually showed Zamunda Hakim's, it actually showed him having growth. It just isn't the same character we saw in, what was it, 1988?
Yeah. I think. Well, I felt like it was just, you know, he got older, and that's what happens when you get older. Like, you start processing things differently. You start to wind up a little bit more like your parents than you thought you would.
Yeah, and then, you know, basically being forced into the king role.
Yeah.
Which I – the scene where James Earl Jones, Joffrey Jafur –
when he decides to
– he's going
to
die.
He wants to see his own funeral.
Which I thought was really clever, because James Earl Jones is pretty much like homebound nowadays. Like, he doesn't have much mobility. So they basically like set up a quick studio and then just like digitally cropped him into like that whole scene.
Interesting. They just had him lay down on like a green bed. They just put a sheet on the bed under him.
So, yeah, he's not actually in that scene. You know, I didn't know that until, like, I read it afterwards.
And this is the first I'm hearing about that. I'm not shocked, though, because hearing his voice in the new Lion King and playing Vader in Rogue One, you could just tell the age so much on the voice that it, you know, I'm not shocked. Let me put it that way. I haven't seen him in a thing for a while, but I've heard him, and he sounds older for sure.
Yeah, and he wasn't really young clear back in the 80s either, so I mean, he's pushing 90 now, I think.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds right. Dude, he was in Doctor Strangelove. Like, that's going back a ways.
Yeah.
That's like early 60s, right?
I think so.
It seemed like they got a lot of people back, like just about everybody who you would think of except for Samuel L. Jackson, which nobody can remember he's in that. And I don't know how you fit him in that movie anyway.
I think like it would have been just completely shoehorned in, and I don't think it would have worked right. I mean, they –
you could have had him doing something in New York when they went by.
That's about the only place he would fit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, there's only like 5 minutes of that movie that are in New York.
I love that the Jewish guy has to be like 120 now, and he looks exactly the same. That's beautiful. What is that, velvet? Yeah, I found that movie very enjoyable. I like how they played with certain things. Like, there's this whole thing that people are saying where it's like Wakanda stole the idea from Zumunda, right? And so they, like, definitely did things that were Black Panther-esque in it, like all the stick fighting and things like that.
Well, that they
– I mean, I know it's in the original, but they take like it way
Leslie
farther.
Leslie Jones, like, straight up name drop Wakanda.
Yeah.
And she was a lot of fun. Like, everybody that was alive that is still alive wasn't back in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously the
– Louis Anderson. the Dashiki. Because they have a McDowell's and a Zumunda, and somehow Louis Anderson gets to work at it.
Yeah, I mean, it's –
they have the McFlurry. I got the McFlurry. Theirs has the toppings on the bottom. Mine's on the top or something like that.
Yeah, it was – I really enjoyed it. I ended up watching it. The whole family ended up watching it.
Yeah, and weirdly enough, the whole family could watch it. Like, I thought about having my daughter watch it with me, and then I remembered – so I want to say it was like 7 or 8 years ago. I had a couple of kids, and I was like, oh, you should watch this movie with me. And I had completely forgotten that I had been watching it on TV for so long. I just forgot how filthy the original one is. And so it was just like, it starts with the royal penis is clean. Sire. And like, I remember that, so I skipped over that. But it was just like so many things, hand jobs at like St. John's basketball game and all that. And I was just like, fuck, man. So there was no way I was going to sit down with my daughter to watch this. But actually, she could have sat down to watch it. And it was just fine. Like, I thought it was just a fun reunion movie. It didn't take itself too seriously. Like,
yeah. Wesley Snipes' character, he was having a lot of fun, you could tell.
Well, and so that My Name is Dolomite, it's the same director that did Coming to America. It's like Eddie Murphy in both, and Wesley Snipes is like a side guy in both. So, yeah, it's pretty fun.
I like how they wrote that Wesley Snipes, brother of the gal that Hakeem was supposed to marry in the first one, it messed her up so much, so he like wants revenge on it.
Was Lisa? Lisa's the main one, right? Like,
yeah.
Lisa's the queen. So who is her sister? I don't remember, but you know who they didn't have who I would have liked to see?
Eric LaSalle.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going, dude. Still rocking the Jerry curl.
Oh, boy.
Just let your soul glow.
I like how they still had Soul Glow posters in the barbershop, though.
Or how they had Colin Jost was like the great grandson of one of the fucking guys from Trading Places. Like, that was fun.
And they had Dikembe Mutombo.
That's right. That's right. I forgot about that. Salt and Peppa and all kinds of fun cameos.
Yeah. Like, if you were a fan of it and don't, like, really want to dissect it, but just along for a fun ride, it was a good movie.
Yeah.
What would you grade it?
Can I jump back since we are grading and I completely forgot? The octopus one, I'd give an excellent, like a straight up excellent. It's a really great documentary. This one, I'd probably give like satisfactory plus.
I think that's exactly where I'd go. Like, I enjoyed it a lot. By the way,
Coming to America, excellent plus. Like, I think it's the funniest comedy ever. I mean, is there scenes that haven't aged so well? Sure. Still totally funny as shit, you know?
Oh, yeah. I definitely – I mean, I watch it probably once a year, and I just belly roll through the whole thing.
It's so funny, dude. I don't know how it's so funny, but it really is. And by the way, this new one, Arsenio Hall kind of brought it. Like, he even added another character and nailed it.
Yeah, like the old, like, kind of like Rafiki-looking dude.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh, he was tough to look at when he was dressed
up. Intentionally so. How would you grade Coming to America?
Satisfactory plus.
Like, yeah.
It. I really enjoyed it. It's
a fun sit. It's not like I'm ever going to have the – look, I'll be real here. In the future, there will be times where I'm like, I should watch Coming to America and not the Coming number two to America, because, like, I don't know if I'm ever actually going to watch that one again. But the original one is, like, evergreen. But it was fun. Like, it was fun for a sit, you know.
It's going to get stuck in a canal. Well, I just dated this podcast.
Yeah, there's a timestamp right there. Probably by the time this comes out, people won't even remember that was a thing. They'll be talking about, like, I don't know, fucking self-fastening shoes or something. They'll get a pair that actually work.
What was the next line in the Billy Joel song?
Red China?
God, I hope not. Anyway.
All right, well, let's see. What else did I watch? I watched One Night in Miami. So that movie was Regina King directing it, and I don't remember the actors who are in it. So it's about one night in Miami in a hotel, and gathered in the hotel is Malcolm X talking with Sam Cooke, Jim Brown, and Muhammad Ali. And it's apparently right before they all did monumental things. And so it's a conversation around them. There's a lot of Malcolm X talking about how basically he's not approving of the leadership in the Muslim group that he was in at the time. And so he's going to leave them. And Muhammad Ali deciding to join the Brotherhood. And Jim Brown, he's wanting him to take a bigger role. And Jim Brown is like, this is right when he's about to decide to quit football altogether and just go into movies when he was still in his prime. And then Sam Cooke wrote his biggest song and put that out. And so it has all these conversations going back and forth, and a lot of Malcolm X challenging the four of them and saying, are you doing enough for your religion? Are you doing enough for your people? And them pushing back on him as well. And it is interesting. I think the problem with it for me is that, honestly, it's a biopic, and I'm just starting to get sick of biopics. Like, I've been easing off of that a little bit, but I feel like this year there's a lot of biopics, even for the Oscars. And they do the thing where, like, this is literally one night, right? So you're not doing a Cradle to Grave. I feel like they've sort of given up on the Cradle to Grave biopics for the most part. But even that is just being done so much that it's just getting tiresome, because nobody talks like they talk in a biopic, and I'm just starting to get sick of it. And this is not an attack on One Night in Miami. It's just on biopics as a whole.
Yeah.
Like, they're just – I feel like they're a genre of movie that is probably going to go away, because I think people are starting to get sick of it, you know. But it's like, you don't say, you know, we were talking about this last month and you said to me – like, nobody talks like that. You know what I mean? You're not, like, repeating things that already happened to contextualize an invisible audience. Like, nobody talks like that. So right away, it adds this air of unbelievability that we were able to look past for a long time, but I just think in general it's a tired form. Now, that being said, it's a good movie. You know, I'm just feeling a little bit sick of the biopic. So for a biopic, I'd give it, like, a satisfactory plus. For my own personal viewing, it's starting to skew down to a satisfactory minus, because I am getting sick of it. I don't know. It's a lot.
Yeah. I think I would have a hard time with that movie getting all the stuff out of it, just because I'm an old white guy. And I mean, I see the world through the white guy perspective. So, you know, it's hard to...
I'll be honest. This is not challenging your perceptions of anything.
No.
Because this is... Let me put it this way. This particular movie, it's not like a Spike Lee movie, for example. Like, just about any Spike Lee movie you watch where he wrote it is going to be challenging you on multiple levels on race almost always, and make you think about things that you don't want to think about. This is not one of those
movies. And I'm fine with that.
Yeah. But this is not one of those movies. This is, like, for everyone with, like, very basic 60s kind of things. And like the way that they talk about race is more just like, are you going to step up and help your community? They don't really dive into it deeper than that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I don't know. Like, I really don't know anything. Like, I've heard good things about this movie, but I haven't watched it.
I think for a biopic, it's good. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just, I'm getting tired of the form, but it doesn't challenge you on anything. It's just like, it's got four important historical figures from like different arenas all gathered together and them talking about whether they're going to kind of activate. And yeah, there's shadows of it to now, because I think we're way more activated politically the last like 2-3 years, I would say, in general in America. I mean, like, yes, some people always are, but I think it's way more important now, right? Like, remember when Kaepernick knelt? Like, what a big deal that was. Like, however you felt about it, which for the record, like, let the motherfucker kneel. Many, many podcasts of me sticking up for that. It was fucking ridiculous that people were against it. That was a huge deal. And I think the reason why it was so big, above everything else, above the racist fucks who made it so big and everything, is that athletes were not being political for the most part. There was a few exceptions, but nobody on that level was like putting their neck out, you know? Like, I think the closest was LeBron James wearing shirts that say, I can't breathe, when Eric Garner was choked out, like before Kaepernick. And that like kind of made the rounds for a couple of days, but that's all. It was just like a shirt, you know, they didn't push it very much farther. But Kaepernick definitely like energized a lot of players and like sports players in general. And I think the fact that he took the hit and fucking wasn't able to get re-signed with the team and had that blow up the way that it blew up, I think it like really activated a lot of people in sports to be more politically active. And so I think that's why it was such a lightning rod, if that makes sense. But I feel like right now, is there a lightning rod? I feel like there's so many people that are political on both sides. It's like it's hard to pick one to kind of put in the center of it.
Which I think is a good thing. If it, you know, at least, you know,
it shouldn't be one guy.
It shouldn't be one guy because, yeah, you know, they can do something and discredit that one person and then the movement falters.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. So One Night in Miami is kind of talking to the situation a bit today, but it almost feels like it's talking more to like 5 years ago than it is to now in a way. So I don't know. Here's another thing. I'm going to go on record in this one. I don't think there's been a great depiction of Muhammad Ali in film. I feel like we've gotten three depictions now, and I'm not really happy with any of the three. Like, one is this modern one, and I don't know. It doesn't feel much like Muhammad Ali to me, to be honest, because he was such a big, loud, brash character. And apparently behind closed doors, he was very soft-spoken and not at all like he was out in public. But this movie has him somewhere in between. And so it just doesn't feel very much like Muhammad Ali to me. The Michael Mann movie, I mean, I know people are going to crucify me for this one, but I just like, I found that movie very boring, like very boring. And they were doing fights that I've watched on YouTube and have loved. And I found it very boring the way that Michael Mann filmed it. Like, Michael Mann just makes his movies, you either vibe with him or you don't, you know. And I'm sure Will Smith did a good job. I just like, I wasn't in love with that movie. And then you had The Greatest, where Muhammad Ali was playing himself, and Muhammad Ali could not act. So just not a huge fan. I thought the guy who played Jim Brown did pretty good in One Night in Miami. Didn't particularly strike me like Jim Brown, but I liked what he was doing. The guy who did Malcolm X did a really good job, I thought. Let me put it this way. It's not going to win anything. I saw other movies that were stronger for sure. I saw Minari, for example, with Steven Yeun from The Walking Dead, right? Like, play Glenn. That movie is really good. I will say it's not like top tier, you know, but I don't think there's one of those movies out there this year. I think the pandemic kind of hurt movies as a whole. And so we only got half of the movies that we would have normally seen for the Oscars. But I think Minari is really good. And it's about some Korean immigrants who are like, they had moved to Seattle and then they were moving out to this farm country. And the wife doesn't really want to move out there. And so it's just this adjustment for the family. And I think normally it would have been kind of a boring cookie cutter movie, but because they're like Korean immigrants, it's really interesting. There's like a different flavor to everything that they're doing. And on top of it, they're speaking in Korean for like 90% of the movie. And so you're really paying attention to their the way they're saying things rather than what they're saying it a lot. Steven Yeun just does a great job. And I feel like to me that's probably going to be the most memorable movie for the year. I really liked Mank a lot. I hope that wins Best Picture. I don't think it will. Got the most nominations, but I don't think it's going to take too much.
I just remembered another movie that I watched I really want to talk about.
Well, what else did you watch?
I watched on Netflix the movie I Care a Lot.
Okay.
With Peter Dinklage and Rosamund Pike.
What's that about?
So Rosamund Pike plays this court-appointed guardian. So basically she's crooked and she like teams up with doctors and finds like upper middle class, like fairly well-to-do people that are getting older and, you know, getting very early signs of dementia, and basically teams up with a doctor to grant emergency custody of these individuals and then basically sell everything they have and pocket all the money.
Ugh.
I hated watching Rosamund Pike because she is really good at it, but it is such an awful premise that I'm pretty sure happens on the regular. She's so despicable. So she grifts this one woman played by Diane Wiest. They get her put in this home and she starts selling off her house and these people just keep showing up to like get her out. And it turns out like she's connected, like Russian mob connected.
Nice.
And like Peter Dinklage is like the head of the Russian mob and like starts like tracking her down and just like starts fucking with her. If it didn't have the very, very stinger at the end, I would have hated the ending because she basically gets away with it. And I'll just leave it at that for as a spoiler alert. For
yeah, fair.
If you watch it to that point, finish to the very end because I was like really just kind of pissed off at life while like at the end of this movie. And then like it kind of brought that back. Like I was still pissed, but like it just kind of like took the edge off where I could – wasn't focused on it anymore. Rosamund Pike does a really good job of making you hate her.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I saw that in Gone Girl. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very similar. Like she's very cold, very calculated. I ended up liking it a lot more than I thought I was going to. I'm going to say satisfactory plus. It was an interesting look. Some shitty shit that's going on.
And then Minari, I would probably give like, I don't know, an excellent minus. Honestly, there's only one movie that I've seen so far that's up for Oscars I give excellent, and it's it's Mank. I just, like I said, I don't think it'll win anything. I did see another Best Picture movie. What the fuck was it? Nomadland, which I think is streaming on Prime right now.
I know it's on Hulu.
Maybe it's on Hulu, yeah. It's interesting because they have weird plugs for Amazon during it. I mean, not intentionally, but they have her walking up to buildings that are for Amazon because basically what it is Frances McDormand is playing this character who comes from this town and her husband dies. She stays in this house and then like the whole town dies. And so she lives in an RV and she just kind of travels with where there's jobs. And there's this whole subset of people that do it. I think she is the only actress in the entire movie. And everybody else who's in the movie actually is one of these people that goes around from job to job. It's just really, really interesting. And they have little problems that come up at certain points where it's just like she has to go to the bathroom like really bad. Her toilet's broken and things like that, you know, like things you wouldn't even think of and kind of dealing with all of it. And that's a movie that's going to stay with me for a long time. But at the end of the day, I don't know that it's saying anything profound that I haven't already known. Do you know what I mean? I almost like it when movies like make you really think about something you haven't thought about. And Nomadland doesn't quite do it either. I don't know. Like I'm well aware that corporations are fucking over people, but they don't concentrate on it all that much. It's a lot of like focusing on boomers that just don't have homes and kind of live in their vans, you know, and what they do to make the rounds. Like, it's interesting, but it's just not a great year for the Oscars. I'm going to be honest with you. The pandemic's really fucked over the Oscars this year. Like, I like how diverse it is. Like, that's cool, and I would like that to continue. But, like, last year, for example, Parasite. I can still talk about Parasite and get so goddamn excited to talk about it, you know?
That movie was interesting.
Like, the only one that I saw that, like, I'm so interested to get into the minutia of it is Mank. And I can't imagine just about anybody I'm knowing actually want to sit down and watch Mank. So it's just one of those years, you know?
Yeah.
We had one 2 years ago, I think, where it was just like, it was a little lackluster, you know? Like, wow. Remember we really racked our head as to, wait, was it 2 years ago? Maybe it was 3 years ago. When did Get Out come out? It was a year after Get Out, I think. Yeah, it's probably 2 years.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Because I remember, like, ultimately we went with Black Panther for Best Picture, but it was like, I don't know.
We knew that wasn't really going to happen, but
yeah.
I think that was a lot of hopefulness.
It wasn't even hopefulness on my part. It was just like, it was a bit lack. Like, anytime a superhero movie, it's not talking shit about Black Panther, I loved it. But anytime there's a superhero movie that's up for Best Picture, it's a down year. If you haven't come up with any dramas that can, like, counter that, you know? Like, I really like Black Klansman, for example. I remember that being fun. Honestly, I don't think there's a movie as fun as Black Klansman up for an Oscar this year. Like, that's an indictment right there, you know? It's just the pandemic really fucked everything.
Fuck you, COVID.
Yeah, fuck you, COVID. Oh, I did see Judas and the Black Messiah. That was one that I watched, and apparently the lead and supporting are up in the Oscars, and that was a pretty good movie. It was definitely, like, low energy, but I will say for a biopic, actually, this is, like, head and shoulders above One Night at Miami, to be honest, now that I'm thinking about it. So it's about the leader of the Black Panthers, and I don't remember the actor's name, but he's in Get Out. He's the one who is wearing, like, the hat and is really odd because he has an old person in his brain. And then he's also on the show Atlanta. Like, he's one of the main three people in Atlanta. But that guy is the main character in it. And you see it at the beginning of the movie. He shows up to a bar and he basically makes everybody put their wallets up on the table because he says he's a cop, shows his badge. And then, like, or he makes them put their keys up on the table. And then he takes this one guy's keys and he runs off with this car. And so he gets arrested. And Jesse Plemons is the FBI agent who gets him. And he basically tells him he's got a year for stealing the car and 5 years for impersonating an officer. But he can lose it all if he joins the Black Panther movement. And so, and like, this guy did it. Like, in real life, he was a rat for the FBI. And it's really interesting because it's a very unflinching look at the Black Panthers. You know what I mean? Like, they are definitely for fighting back against the cops and opening fire on the cops in certain situations. But they're also for building the community, and they show that. And, like, the main character is just, like, he's fucking racked with guilt at all this stuff. And do you know how the founder of the Black Panther Party, do you know how he died?
No.
It's pretty fucked up. By the way, that character's in two movies up for Best Picture this year, like this one and the Trial of the Chicago 7. Basically, they made the guy write out a map of the guy's apartment because he was going back to jail. But when he was in jail the first time, his power didn't, like, wane. It actually grew while he was in jail. And that's where the Messiah thing comes from, you know? Basically, J. Edgar Hoover wanted him gunned down. And so they went into the apartment and fucking opened fire on a bunch of people and then went up to him straight in his bed and just fucking executed him in his bed the night before he was going to turn himself over to go to prison. And so, like, that's how he fucking died. It is fucked up. And so they showed part of the actual interview with the guy who this is based off of. And he did this interview for PBS. They asked him at the beginning of the movie, they showed it, and they said, "Do you think it was the right decision that you made?" And then they, like, kind of play out the movie. And at the end, they show him asking him that question again. He goes, "I think history will decide." So a couple weeks later, that show airs on PBS. And then he fucking commits suicide that night that it airs. So, like, it's just, like, a sad, fucked up story. But that one was pretty good. That was, like, an excellent minus. But it's really, really interesting. And at the end of the day, you don't know what the main character, what he's really thinking about the stuff, right? Like, you can just tell he's conflicted about all of it. But it's really good. Daniel Kaluuya from Get Out is in it as well. And, Little Rev what the fuck is his name? The guy who plays the the ATS agent in Get Out.
Oh, the friend?
Yeah, yeah. He's in it as well. It's a fucking Get Out reunion, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. So I'd recommend that one. That's of all the movies I talked about, it's probably the best one. Yeah, I guess that would reach up to an excellent for me. It was on HBO Max for a while. It's not anymore. I think it's back in theaters now. You know, like 7 theaters across the U.S. somewhere.
Sevens of theaters.
Yeah, sevens of theaters. All right. You got anything else you want to cover?
Yeah, I'm just haven't been watching a lot of movies. Like, it's been a lot of series stuff on TV.
Yeah.
I mean, like Falcon Winter Soldier, and we had the whole run on WandaVision. And
yeah, I don't even know what to say about that stuff on the podcast, to be honest. I really enjoyed WandaVision. I'm enjoying Falcon and the Winter Soldier so far. It's definitely going where I want it to go.
Yeah.
Like, I've been talking a lot about something that really made an impression on me in the comics was in Sam Wilson, Captain America. They had this whole thing where, like, Fox News is basically running this thing that says, "Not my Cap," over and over again. And they don't say, "Fuck him because he's black." But, like, the message is clearly, "Fuck him because he's black." And he's noticing that anytime he makes a mistake that any other hero would make, they just come down on him like a ton of bricks in the press.
We didn't really want to get into it, but like the first episode of Falcon, where Falcon's trying to get a business loan for him and his sister. Mm-hmm. The vendors don't get paid.
Yeah.
Like, and that is such a Stan Lee, Jack Kirby thing for Marvel, where like these guys got real problems.
Yeah. It feels more like a Spider-Man problem, to be honest.
Well, I mean, they did that in the Sam Raimi verse.
Yes, but I don't just mean that. I just mean in general, like, that's a Spider-Man thing in the comics. Like, when you have a superhero who's fucking flat broke, it's usually Spider-Man. Like, he usually doesn't have two nickels to rub together. But I'm not against them having that in the MCU. And I, like, so many people are concentrating on, like, he didn't get paid in the Avengers. To me, it's very much like this white fucking banker is not going to let
a black guy get the loan. It definitely was played as a racial tone. There was connotations there,
and it amazed me how much people did not pick up on it in that first episode. And then they dialed it up in the second episode, and people started to notice. But, like, him being harassed by the cops when he's talking with Bucky, right?
Oh, yeah. That urban Baltimore, like, where there has been a lot of problems with police and racial inequality. Like, if any place where the cops are going to be fucked up, it's going to be Baltimore. And
it's going to be everywhere.
Well, yeah.
I mean, yeah. Let's just be real about this.
No, but, like, you know, for 8-9 years record. Now, there's been a bad track record in Baltimore.
No, I understand what you're saying. I just – I've known too many cops.
Yeah.
Calling it like I see it, which is fucking racist as fuck, most police officers.
Yeah. I like how they didn't have a problem with Winter Soldier, but Falcon, who has always been like a straight-up good guy.
And a veteran.
Yeah, and Bucky has some shady past.
Dude. They basically alluded to, like, he's a reason why the world's so fucked in a way, you know. I mean, the blip's not his fault, but the rest of it is.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff that they could trace back to Bucky.
I thought it was interesting with that Isaiah guy, which I knew passingly about him in the comics, that he was a black Captain America. And it was basically like there was 5 heroes and he was the only one that survived, like taking a super soldier serum. And then they basically like threw him in jail for 30 years in Marvel Comics. So I thought it was pretty interesting that they're rolling out that guy too. But what I really like is they have this thing like, why did Falcon turn down the shield, right? And then I was really hoping this is where they'd go with it. And they absolutely are. And I'm so happy. I just like that they're actually, the show's about something. You know what I mean? Like WandaVision was about grief for sure.
Yeah.
This show is definitely about racism, I feel like. And I'm glad that they're going there. You know what I mean? Like, I'm glad that they're taking the time to go there. And it was my favorite thing with Falcon in the comics. So I want to see more of that. You know, I want to see him be Captain America. All this talk about Bucky, fuck that dude. like, I mean, no offense to him or anything, but like, I want to see Falcon as Captain America. Like,
you know, Falcon and all the movies I watched, he is a straight up good guy. Like, there wasn't ever a point where you watched his character and he was doing some shady shit. There was some stuff where, like, he was on Captain's side, which was, like, against the Soviet or Sokovia Accords. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that is just a point of view. It's not right or wrong.
Oh, Cap was right, though, and so was Falcon. Like, that whole side was right. I said it from the beginning. It's on a podcast and probably Montague Skies. Right after the movie came out, we were talking with Brent, and he was like, are you Team Iron Man or Team Captain America? I was like, Team Captain America? What are you
Team
even talking
Iron Man,
about?
What the fuck?
Yeah. Like, now, fuck Team Iron Man, dude. They're just like, it was so obvious to me that Captain America was right in that. Like, you know why? Because, like, as much as they talk about the individuals, like, superpowered individuals, I fear the government way more than I fear, like, the individual. Does that make sense? Like, we had an insurrection, okay? Those people coming in with, like, they could be scary for sure. You know what's scarier? The people who fucking riled up those people to, like, do that. You know what I mean? Like, they kept people in cages. They fucking did all kinds of fucked up shit. And then they, like, stirred up a bunch of the other people to, like, go and do their dirty work for them. Like, those are the scarier people, the people at the top, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I fall in. But this is probably a good place
I feel like it's up. A good. So just final thoughts. You're going Team Kong then.
Yeah. Team Kong? Like, does he have somebody on a computer who's just like, I'm in the mainframe.
I'm in.
I hacked all the cameras from Tokyo. I can see Godzilla coming down the street.
I'm Team Godzilla all the way.
Who would be on Team Godzilla and Team Kong? Like, Team Godzilla.
I mean, Team Kong's got Samuel L. Jackson.
No, he ate Samuel L. Jackson.
Well, I mean, he's part of Team Kong.
No. He got defecated out. I feel like Kong is a lone wolf. He might be fucked in this if, like, they go to actual teams.
I mean...
Okay. He's got... So if we go through the whole Kong canon, you've got Kong Jr., right?
Diddy Kong?
Well, they had... I don't remember what it was called, but in the 80s, they had a movie where King Kong had a baby. So there's the little Kong. What's the other ape character... Who's like a ripoff of King Kong from like the 60s or 70s?
God, I don't know.
It's not going to come to me right now.
I'm pretty sure I've just seen a couple of Kong movies. I've seen way more Godzilla.
Mighty Joe Young. So you got Mighty Joe Young and Kong versus, like, let's just say Godzilla and Mothra. Because, like, you can't have Mecha Godzilla because he always fights Godzilla, right?
Yeah, they're always butting heads.
Everybody else in the Godzilla universe fights Godzilla, so except for sometimes he's friends with Mothra.
Yeah, I was going to say, so was it Ghidorah? Is, since he's fighting Godzilla, does that make them on the same side?
I don't know. The enemy of my enemy is my friend?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, Team Kong's going to fucking wipe the mat with Team Godzilla.
Ghidorah's a pretty formidable foe. You got a freaking giant Hydra. They can fly.
You know what I was just thinking? You were talking about, like, Kong's spray, right? Like his radioactive breath.
Yeah.
He can blow that or whatever. All Kong has to do is come up behind him. And guess what? Godzilla, little teeny tiny arms. He can't do shit with those arms, dude.
But he can't be attacked from back because he got spikes back there.
So what? Kong doesn't give a fuck. He just has to come in from the side. If he comes in from the side and squeezes, there ain't shit that Godzilla can do.
But he can't get his arms around him.
Sure he can. Why not? You just fucking
spikes.
Break off a plate or two, and then you put your arm around it, squeeze really tight. That's all it takes.
But he's also – Godzilla's also nuclear-based, so the fucking radiation poison.
I don't know that the radiation's going to affect Kong, dude. Like, I keep hearing this from people, but, like, the fact is we've got no, like, evidence that King Kong can die from radiation poisoning. Like, there is no precedent for an ape that big, which means he ain't no normal fucking ape. You know what I'm saying?
But he's not a giant lizard.
So what?
Lizard god.
You know what? You know how deadly lizards are? Maybe deadly? Guess what? I like lizards are not even in the top 10,000 of things that I worry about, because like the idea a lizard's going to run up and bite me is so little, dude. It's fucking they're slow as shit. I'm not scared of no lizard. Now, even the smallest monkey can fuck your shit up. Like the smallest monkey can just fucking grab your arm, rip it out of its socket, beat you over the head with it, and then like bite you on the chest while you're like armless, like screaming. And then you're like led to bleed out.
Now,
that's a fucking monkey, dude. That's like a baby monkey with a diaper that looks all cute. And then until it just fucking comes unhinged.
Is it going to start throwing poo now, too?
Well, yeah, that's what they do. that's their fucking, that's their biological that's their weapon. Because like if they don't kill you in that fight, you're going to be covered with shit. And if you're Godzilla, you can't like wipe that shit off because you have teeny tiny arms.
No, but
so you
can
get infected and you die.
Burn
later.
That shit off with your radioactive
How?
Fire.
It only goes that far. You throw shit on Godzilla's back, there ain't nothing he can do.
He can burn all that shit. He just gets hotter. He literally melts the ground around him.
That's not King
if
Kong.
If it can melt the ground, it can definitely melt Kong's shit.
This is the argument we should have had at the start. Fuck you, you're wrong. I'm out. Listen to all the podcasts on the Not Safer Network. Go in depth with your favorite movies and explore the themes, the influences, and the core of what made it great. Every week, listen to A Cosmic Void. Jump back into the new season of Movies with Wrestlers as Eric and Connor answer the question, who makes the better movies, John Cena or The Rock? Revisit classic TV shows with a modern eye in the show In Syndication. And two movies that were box office bombs, underappreciated, or forgotten to time are dissected and thrown into battle with each other in a continuing effort to pull a cinematic diamond out of the rough every week on Box Office Battle.